and welcome to Talking Theater. I'm Alex Donovan, and over the next year, I'm going to be conducting interviews with the directors of the shows that go up here at the U of A. Today, I'm joined by Michael Bradley, the director of Hamlet by William Shakespeare, the first show in the Blevis Laboratory Theater for the year. So welcome, Michael. Do you want to just give yourself a little introduction, give us some background info?
Sure. I'm in my second year of directing here at U of A. I came here from Toronto. I grew up in Ontario. I've been spending most of my adult life working at being an actor, and I made the decision to come here to study directing because I found that I was reading plays differently over the last few years, and I was starting to, when I first started to read plays, when I was working as an actor, I would go to watch plays and I would imagine myself, you know, in the place of that character, and I would read a play and I would feel kind of empathy for one character or another, and I would, you know, put myself in that position. And over the last few years, I started to kind of look at plays and imagine how they would be and what it would seem like and what it would look like. And my kind of idea of a play kind of got more complicated over the last few years. And I kind of came up against the wall of my own ignorance at a certain point when I started to pursue directing and started to look at directing projects. I realized that I didn't have the craft for it, and so I decided to try to learn the craft.
Yeah, it's a very different set of skills than coming from. I also came from acting first, and when that shift, when it happens, can be a pretty dramatic one.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts, and there's leadership needed. So yeah,
big time. So what drew you to this play then? Have you had the experience of reading it as an actor before and then coming to it as a director? Or
I guess it was some play that always intimidated me. Mm-hmm. I've always loved Shakespeare. I like watching it and I like reading it. But I have been intimidated to approach it often. Mm-hmm. Other than, I suppose there's ones that I find more more accessible, like A Midsummer Night's Dream and Twelfth Night, and kind of the comedies I find more accessible to me, and this one kind of felt like a mountain that I wanted to climb, and so I thought, what better place to challenge myself than here at grad school?
Of course, because Hamlet is very much like, it's Hamlet, right? You know, you've had these such incredible performances of it throughout history. So I know even myself too, when I read Hamlet or think about even directing it, it's like, oh no, I can't.
Yeah, I mean, you approach it with the weight of expectation and with the knowledge that there's a lot of people who've done it well, and a lot of people who've tried to do it well and failed, and people want to put their own stamp on it, and that exercise in and of itself can be can get in the way of illuminating the text.
Of course,
you're trying to also illuminate yourself. But you know, I guess the discovery I've made in doing this is that it's kind of the perfect vehicle to illuminate yourself artistically. Because it has so much in it, it has many roads in, and it contains kind of, in a lot of ways, it contains all of us, and it contains all of humanity. You know, I mean, people say that about Shakespeare, but I think in particular, Hamlet has a lot of breadth, and so there's room for your own artistic bent on it. It's got the structure for it.
Absolutely. So, speaking of kind of putting your own sort of stamp on it, with most of Shakespeare's work, you're dealing with numerous amounts of cuts that you kind of have to. There's a little bit of guidance sometimes, but you've got to kind of go on your own to take this, you know, 4.5 hour play and make it a manageable time. So how did you kind of tackle that?
Well, I knew I needed it to be shorter because I knew how much rehearsal time I would get and the resources I had. So I definitely knew that I had to make it more manageable so that we could dig into it. And so I started to look for the things that provoked me, right? You kind of sink into it, and look for the sort of punctums, the things that kind of strike you, and I just started to write them down. And
excellent.
You know, and eventually, I guess, it struck me, on the one hand, how much the play deals with the process of enacting something, right? Mm-hmm. Hamlet talks about what it is to perform, the differences between what seems and what is, and also the kind of the thing that I was struggling with, that I struggle with, is mm-hmm. the reason why I took Hamlet on is that it is this, it's a great task and nobody will be up to it.
Right.
And I saw myself mirrored in Hamlet in that way, being handed something that's bigger than you are and yeah. have to accomplish it somehow.
That's a good one. That, because that's very much the heart of Hamlet, right? This whole, you have a monumental task you have to take on, and it's how do you do that correctly, right? How do you do it without making too many... Because for some reason, the popular culture have this weird notion of Hamlet as a person of inaction, despite the fact that throughout the play, he does so much. It's just in getting the chance to do it right is that kind of, like, feeling there.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. It's a play about fear in a lot mm-hmm. of ways. It's a play about action in the face of fear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for the very beginning, mm-hmm. Hamlet's compelled into action mm-hmm. and comes up against his own fear, mm-hmm. and I guess that's something I understand. yeah. So I kind of looked at it in terms of what. Not only is it about the story of Hamlet, but it's about us trying to put that on the stage.
Of course.
And so in that respect, it's kind of got a double story going on for mm-hmm. us, where we're showing ourselves in the enactment of Hamlet, and we're also telling the story of Hamlet.
Excellent. Just in the interest of, well, not giving anything away, but for you, did you decide to, while you were cutting and adapting it for a different time period, or are you doing it more in a period era?
It's interesting. Like, Shakespeare took the story mm-hmm. that was not his own story and mm-hmm. made it his own, right? So it was a story about medieval Denmark, mm-hmm. and Shakespeare made it a story about medieval Denmark in Elizabethan England.
Yeah.
Right? And so it was very much about making it contemporary and making it deal mm-hmm. with the ideas of his time. Mm-hmm. And over the centuries of people doing Hamlet, that's been the process, right? How is this now? Mm-hmm. How are we like them? Mm-hmm. So that's where I came from, is the idea that this is us now mm-hmm. enacting a story of then.
Yeah.
So it kind of lives in both worlds in some ways. It has the elements of the past, but through the medium of the present.
Yeah. It's interesting, because so often we forget that many of Shakespeare's shows were not set in Elizabethan England, right?
Like totally.
He was writing period pieces of his own in some ways. So, yeah, it seems to fit perfectly for this sort of bringing it into our era.
Yeah, and it deals with, I mean, at the time it was dealing with the clash of beliefs between Catholicism and Protestantism and mm-hmm. the kind of existential questions that those two belief systems kind of butt up against.
Mm-hmm.
And like, those essential questions haven't gone away. The question of what happens when we die, the very simple question mm-hmm. of what happens when we die, we don't have any answer to, right? I mean, we know a lot, but we don't know that.
Yeah.
And we still spend our lives contending with it.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So moving a little bit more now to the process, what's the journey been like getting to rehearsals? You're quite far through the process at this point, so you're getting close to showtime.
Yeah, we're moving into the theater next week.
Exciting.
Yeah, it's really exciting. Things are getting built. It's been really exciting. It became, as I said, an unpacking process of seeking and discovering all the possibilities. Mm-hmm. And so that is a kind of complicating process.
Yeah.
And then we had to make a simplifying process again, where we mm-hmm. had to go, okay, well, then what's at the core of that? What mm-hmm. what discoveries serve our vision of the play?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very collaborative with the actors. I want them to inform their characters, because everybody puts, the great thing about Shakespeare is that everybody is in them, right? And so I want to, I cast these actors because I want to see them reflected in Hamlet and Ophelia and Claudius and, you know, all of them. I'm doing it with seven actors.
Cool.
So it became a process of negotiating how the story goes, right with these seven people. In my version, Horatio is a storyteller figure. He's he has been amalgamated with the player.
Okay.
And so, so he is there to help Hamlet, but also to observe Hamlet. And he and Hamlet together enact the murder of Gonzago in the story. And he's kind of a through line. He frames it for us, and he brings us into the world and then steps out of it occasionally. You know, I've got actors playing multiple roles as well. And so it became a process of discovering where they overlap and where they diverge and what are the differences and really getting at the core of each scene and what's the core action, really concerning ourselves with action. I mean, the kind of meta theatrics of it all are being layered into it now, the sort of overstory of it. But really, once we are in the rehearsal room, we're concerned with the stakes and the action of the scene at hand. And so it's been exciting. It's been it's been illuminating. It's you know, I'm pushing the actors and they're pushing me. Our fight director, Jade Elliott McRae, is brought a lot of excitement into the room. He speaks of fights in terms of intention and action, and it really sits well in the way that we have conceived the whole play. So so it's really organic and life and death. And it's
fantastic.
It's exciting. Yeah.
That's really interesting too, hearing, because Horatio often gets a little sidelined as a character. So hearing, like, taking that to make all these characters have such important weight in the story is a very sounds like a very dramatically engaging idea, just to bring everyone to the forefront in that way.
Yeah, I mean, we grappled with the idea of what does Horatio have at stake, right? Why does he have? Exactly. He doesn't seem to have a dog in this fight, other than being Hamlet's friend. Nobody but Hamlet seems to mind him being there or ask anything of him, and it sort of begged the question: why does he keep hanging around? He's got all these scenes that he just watches and occasionally gives support in. And so I took a step back and go, well, what is it about this play that needs a watcher? And at the end, he's the only one left standing in our production. I mean, this is the other, I mean, one of the easy kind of major cuts for me was to turn it from a political play into a domestic play, right? By taking away Norway and Ferdinand and sorry, Fortinbras, and really just contend with the people in Elsinore. So in the end of our play, Horatio is left alone and asked to tell this story. He's been given a task as big as Hamlet's is. Don't let anybody forget about this and let them know me.
Oh, yeah, that's excellent. Because that's, I mean, that's a lot of theme with theater, too, in general. It's about telling stories, right? It's about sharing these stories and continuing these stories. So I think that's a pretty, sounds like a very dramatically interesting concept to go with.
I hope so.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hopefully
I'm excited by it.
We'll find out. well, it sounds exciting. So, okay, so can you talk just a little bit about what the journey's been like to get to this point in the program, even? What are some of the things that have started to, that have helped you enter into this rehearsal process?
I guess for me, the thing that surprised me is how much I have to contend with what kind of an artist I want to be. Finding my own voice in the director's art. Because I know that a huge part of a director's work is to illuminate the playwright's voice and help the actors to illuminate their own voices. And the thing that I've really discovered being here is how much the people that I admire, the directors that I admire, have been able to really articulate and push forward an artistic voice that's meaningful to them. And so it's been a process of trying to figure out what I have to say about about anything.
Fantastic. Yeah, well, that's great. I mean, that's what's so wonderful about having programs like this, where you can actually find yourself kind of as an artist, as a director, in a safe environment too, right? In a learning environment.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that made me want to go to grad school for directing is just the time that you have. You say, I'm going to take 2 years and I'm just going to explore this craft and as much as possible set aside the real world, right?
Absolutely.
As much as possible. I mean, I came here with my family and I still have a lot of other things pulling me in different directions, but ultimately it's such a gift of time to just focus on developing myself as an artist.
Yeah.
And I hope that that will, I hope that that will bear fruit when I leave here.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It always sometimes feel in the middle of the thing that there isn't enough time. But
yeah. How do I deal with panic? How do I deal with like an overload of information and a sort of onslaught of exciting assignments?
Of course, yeah. Well, because you get so excited about everything. And there's so much to do, which is good. I mean, and that's the feeling. And even when you're outside of this, there never feels like enough time anyway. So it's a kind of a good good thing to get used to.
Yeah, I mean, there's never enough time. There's never enough money. And, and you know, how do you still stay lively and excited?
Of course. So just to kind of coming near the end now, I was wondering if there was any particular challenges you've faced with a production of this kind of type, of this size, or any kind of surprises you've had during the process, things you didn't anticipate.
Well, the when your ideas hit the road, right? On the one hand, I quickly realized, oh, this thing that I thought was going to work doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the big thing, but some of the decisions that I made in my script adaptation, where I find myself butting up against my own problems, the problems that I've created, then we have to contend with.
Right.
So on the one hand, it's a discovery of what works and what doesn't, and having to kind of set aside ideas that I was really excited about. But on the other hand, trusting that instinct as well and going, I still think there's something here, even though it's not here yet, and trusting the artists that I'm working with that they're going to help me to uplift and illuminate it, and giving it breathing space. You know, holding fast to things that haven't had their fair shake yet.
Yeah.
And trying to negotiate what's a thing I want to give more time and what is something I need to let go of.
Yeah, that's always the hard thing too. You come up to a point where you're like, okay, we've tried when we tried. Sometimes you have to give concessions in certain areas, but yeah, it's always great to give everything its fair due, right? It's fair. It's fair time. Yeah. Fantastic. All right. Well, thank you so much for sitting down and talking about the show. Can we know when we can see it?
It's happening October 15th and 16th at the Blevis Laboratory Theater here at the U of A. You can sign up for tickets at the drama office.
Which I believe they'll probably put those sheets up.
A week or so beforehand.
Yeah.
There'll be a matinee on the Sunday. There'll be two evening shows. We have a big house, so everybody's welcome.
Excellent. Well, I hope to see everyone out there. You can follow us on iTunes at Talking Theater, or you can go check us out at talkingtheater.podomatic.com. See you next time.